This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I'm God by the name Milton, joined by the returning Marcus Vanderberg, and no Big Nasty this week, Brother Marcus.
Nope. He has some car issues he's working on, I guess.
So I was going to say he's out chasing something white and fast with a nice body. And I was going to let the listeners come to their own conclusions. But, yeah, he has some car issues. So it's going to be the two-man power trip this week. But before we get into the wild world of sports, and there are certainly a lot of things to talk about this week, brother, welcome back. For those that don't know, Marcus did pop the question to his boo last week down in Orlando, Florida. And unlike Chris Sabin on TNA Impact last week, there was actually a ring in the box. And she said yes. So congratulations, brother. How was your week?
Thanks, man. It was a good week. I had fun at Disney World. My first real time going. I've been twice before, but both times were sort of only for a few hours, so... first road trip to really check out the whole park. We're both big Disney people since we live out here with Disneyland and stuff. So it was a good chance to check out Disney World and not work for a few days, which is always a good thing.
I'm sure you had a lovely time out enjoying all the rides and having the romantic dinners with your girl. But what I and everybody else wants to know is, did you go see Captain EO?
Oh, of course. Oh, yes. we've usually always seen when we're at the parks at Disneyland. So yeah, we had to see it at Disney World, and it didn't disappoint. You know, it's the same 15-minute show that it always is. But just the fact that they had so much star power in terms of Coppola, MJ, and George Lucas, and that on that project in the 80s, and the fact that this was really probably the first big 3D project that the world was introduced to, it's still fascinating to watch 30 years later.
Yeah, the crazy thing is they actually canceled it. Like, I remember going to Disneyland probably in the early 90s, and Captain EO was just this ridiculous experience. Like you said, it's 15 minutes, and, you know, you got the space adventure and Michael Jackson and the songs. It's just another part of me. And it's just a great thing. And then I guess in the late 90s, they cut it from the parks, and then I guess after MJ's death, they brought it back because, well, you know why
they
never wanted to turn down a book.
Well, you know why they had to cut it, right?
I mean, why would you not want little children to see Michael Jackson in a spangly costume singing to them?
Mm-hmm. I've told you the Neverland story, right?
No, you haven't.
Oh, I've been to the ranch.
You've been to Neverland Ranch?
Yeah.
How old were you when you went to Neverland?
I was a teenager. I was probably like...
did you sleep in Michael's room that night? Did you have some Jesus juice?
I did not. I was like 12 or 13 maybe. I'll tell the story real quick. So growing up, my neighbor worked security for Michael Jackson. She was a former LAPD cop, and she ended up being private security for MJ. So one day, Michael had a friends and family weekend for people who worked for him at the ranch. And our neighbor invited us to go, so the entire family went. Drove up, it's a little north of Santa Barbara in California. And before you get to the ranch, there was like security who was stopping every car to make sure you didn't have any cameras in the car, because they wanted no pictures, video, etc. And this is long before the cell phone era in terms of cameras. So once we passed through security and stuff, we got to the ranch, and The best way to describe it was it felt like a mini amusement park. He had a train that ran through the entire ranch. He had a movie theater. He had his own private zoo. He had this arcade. He had, along the train stop, you could ride the train, and one of the stops was literally at this candy store, and it was like all the candy you could eat for free. It was pretty insane. And no,
everything a child would want.
It, pretty much. And no, there was no Michael Jackson sighting, so we were trying to.
I was going
to
say, was MJ there?
He was not there. Well, they say he was not there. He could have been in the window looking, scoping, scouting.
I like that light skin one right there.
Yeah. But yeah, it's one of those.
Did you see Bubbles? Was Bubbles on the ranch?
I do not remember seeing Bubbles. No, I did. I remember seeing animals, but I don't remember if he was there in particular.
Oh, wow. So I never thought in the history of this podcast we would have a story where one of the kings, as a young prepubescent boy, would have an adventure in Neverland.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those memories / stories that, you know, every now and then it'll come up when people talk about Michael Jackson, and I'll say, oh yeah, I've been to the ranch, and then people usually have the same response of, how old were you, and was Michael there? Yeah.
Marcus, don't you want to climb trees?
No.
Oh, rest in peace, Michael. Well, there's no way to segue into our first story off of Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, well, if you haven't...
Well, his name is Michael.
Yeah, okay, yeah. From one Michael to another. Look at that, that's professionalism right there. But if you haven't been living... if you have been living under a rock for the past week, you may not have heard this story, but it has been not only a big topic in the world of sports, but also, you know, in general, in pop culture and cultural news. And that is Michael Sam from the University of Missouri announcing that he is gay. His teammates have known this for a year, and he has entered the NFL draft. And if drafted, he will be the first openly gay professional football player in America. And it's, you know, we've kind of talked about this. You know, we had the Jason Collins story, and then, of course, how could we forget, you know, Hollywood Simpson and Kerry Rose and everything that went on with them. But this is a big deal, Marcus, and it's kind of a litmus test to see not so much where the country's at, but where the NFL is at.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the NFL draft this year and how this all worked out. And I think we're going to have a lot of interest in day 3 of the NFL draft, because I think that's where, if he's going to get drafted, it'll be in rounds 4 through 7. And it's going to make the draft must see TV, because people are going to be waiting to see if his name comes up. And I think we'll get a better sense after the combines in a couple weeks to see where exactly he might end up. You mentioned he's the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Those guys usually have a good track record in terms of the NFL draft. So there's also been some stuff about his size. He's a little undersized for his position, so that worked against him. But, you know, I want to say he gets drafted, but at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if the teams pass on him. And if so, that would really be really disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, there's two questions at play here. You know, number one, would an NFL team draft an openly gay player? Let's put that over on one side. But there's also, you know, strictly the X's and O's aspect of it. Like you mentioned, he's undersized, 6'2", 250 pounds. You know, will he be a productive NFL defensive end? Will he have to switch positions? I mean, was a great collegiate player, not only the SEC player, but also, you know, won the, he was named the first team All-American. And he was a semifinalist for the Bednarik Award. But, you know, will this be an easy out for NFL GMs? You know, if they say, well, this is a guy that I may want to spend a third or fourth or fifth round pick on, but I'm not sure if I want to select him. But, oh, because he's come out as an openly gay man, I can not pick him and say, you know, we don't want this distraction. and use those code words and try to play it in that way. Do you think that? Which do you think is going to have a bigger impact, I guess I'm asking you, Marcus, the football aspect of the player that Michael Sam is or the gay aspect?
Oh, I think the gay aspect for sure. But I also think there's got to be at least one team that is already established and take the risk of drafting him wherever in the draft and sort of building him. And
I don't want to be – hey, Marcus, I just thought – wait, why are you saying that? I don't want to be a cynic. I don't want to be that dude, but I'm going to be that dude right quick. If I'm a defensive-minded team and I'm in an area of the country that is more progressive than others in terms of gay rights and people's feelings about gay people, if I'm the San Francisco 49ers, I would jump on this kid in the draft.
Is Chris Tulliver still on the team?
Hey, I mean, you can... We see stranger unions happen. I mean, Hogan and The Undertaker are going to be back on Raw. We can talk about that a little bit later.
I was thinking more of Seattle Seahawks, actually. A little further up, a little more.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad fit either.
Yeah. I hope it's not Oakland. That'd be bad for him. But yeah, I could see a team like Seattle or San Francisco, even New England, who could use the good pub after having Aaron Hernandez to deal with this year. But I can't see like a team that needs to win now, say like the Jets. Well, I hope not the Jets, because that would be a circus. But I can't see a team like the Jets or a lower level team taking the risk and having to deal with the circus that will come with drafting him. So I think he will, I want to say he'll get drafted at some point, probably not until the last day, but whoever drafts him, I think they'll be getting a steal, because I think his stock plummet is going to drop, unfortunately, because of this announcement. And he is a talented player. He's proved it on the field that he can actually play football. So,
and I think this is, you know, a lot of people have been kind of throwing around the Jackie Robinson tag. I'm not going to go that far. I mean, but this is a monumental step. And you know, we talked with Hollywood Simpson again. You can go back and listen to that episode in the archives, but one of the things that we talked about with Kerry Rhodes, and you asked him point blank, you know, does he think Kerry Rhodes will get an opportunity because of everything that's gone on between the two of them and all the stuff in the press? And, you know, he said, I don't know, boo. And you know, we, the three of us, you, myself, and Alfred, pretty much like, you know, this guy's not going to get another shot. So I think between that and also between the Jonathan Martin deal and kind of the perception of these quote-unquote soft players, I think he'll find a lot of receptive people in the NFL, but I also think sports are weird. They change quicker in terms of social issues than major mainstream society, but I think they also move slower when it comes to certain things as well.
Yeah, and the Kerry Rhodes thing, I mean, the searches that would have come with that story is a blip on the radar compared to this story, because we're essentially talking about Kerry Rhodes, a story that was big on the black blogs. It never got mainstream attention because the mainstream never knew how to cover a story like that. So it never really came up. People just say, oh, Kerry Rhodes and rumors, but they never really got into the whole details about it. And the fact that he, who was actually established in the NFL, was a 8-9 year veteran and actually did his position, never got a look at all this year, that's pretty damning. Just talk about Sam for a second. Did you see what his father had to say about his son's announcement?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up just next. And I think I'm not going to condone his comments. And again, I'm looking up the comments right now. I believe he was like, here it is. His father said, you know, he's an old school man, woman type of guy, and I don't want my grandkids raised in that type of environment, again, referring to his son, Michael Sam. And I'm not going to condone those comments, but at the same time, I'm not going to condemn the man, because I'm sure, you know, you're hearing your son's gay and they already have a strained relationship. It's probably a lot to process in a week. I think the more interesting thing would be, you know, maybe what he says a year from now or 2 years from now, when he's had time to get away from the kind of bubble that he's been in since this broke. I mean, but he, it's not a good look for his father, but also, you know, I don't condone it, but I understand, you know, how he could kind of react in that way.
Yeah, well, my issue with the way it was handled is via text. Like, that's not something you text your father to say. Like, you can't text your father and say, hey, Dad, I'm gay. I mean, you're asking for a response that it's not.
And his father, terrible. I believe he was like at his birthday dinner, and they haven't really been close.
Denny's, yeah.
Yeah, and they haven't been close, and then, you know, all of a sudden you get, hey, Dad, I'm gay. You know, I obviously, like I said, you know, the comments are kind of boneheaded and you know, cavemanish almost, but well, in the heat of the moment,
he's,
you know,
also,
I understand.
He's also a deacon, so we got a factor in that aspect as well, is that for church background, this is not something that is acceptable. So, I mean, there's a few combinations of things, but the one thing that really stood out was this part. He said, I'm old school. I'm a man and woman type of guy. And as evidence, he pointed out that he had taken an older son to Mexico to lose his virginity. Yeah. You can't be doing that, Pops. I'm not sure what that says about Michael's brother, but come on, really? You're taking your son to... First of all, why are you going to Mexico? I mean, there's a lot closer places to get this done.
Not if you want to be anonymous, brother.
That's true. Well, he is in Texas, so it's a short trip.
Take a trip down to TJ, ain't nobody going to say nothing. Oh, don't want no trouble, won't be no trouble.
Yeah, but... this is just a... It's really unfortunate that he doesn't have his father's support. And I know his father has already come out and said, oh, he was misquoted, blah, 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 blah. I doubt the New York Times butchered it that much that they got this story wrong. So I'm just sure he's trying to cover his ass now. But, you know, it's not a good sign when you don't have support from your father. So I'm not sure what support he's going to get from 32 strangers and other teams and organizations. So.
Yeah, you know, like I said, with the dad, you know, it's not a good look, but at the same time, it's kind of like he's still processing this. So it's, I think his reaction will be a little bit different in a year. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I do think that time allows wounds to heal and time allows thoughts to crystallize. But before we move on to the next topic, just kind of yes and no, Marcus. Do you think that Michael Sam will be drafted? Will be drafted, and do you think that he'll be a productive player in the NFL?
Yes, he'll be drafted, and I think he'll have to, unfortunately, fight for a roster spot in training camp. And I think eventually he'll be a productive player in the NFL.
Yeah, I think he'll be drafted, and I think you know, I don't know what round. I'm saying no higher than the third round, but I'm thinking more around the fourth round. I think he'll be, I don't know if I'll say productive or an all-star, all-pro. I think he'll be a serviceable player. He may have to switch positions, but somebody's going to give him an opportunity. You know, as much as we think there'll be bad publicity and a lot of hate thrown his way, I also think, like we said earlier, in the right community, that could be a windfall of good publicity for a team.
And let's not, you know, assume there isn't a gay executive in the NFL that has some pull of teams that can make this happen. You know, there's 32 teams and tons of executives in the top. So, you know, I'm sure there's an executive you don't know about who's gay who might be compelled to make the pitch for this guy because he knows he won't have opportunity otherwise, so. It wouldn't surprise me.
That's a good point. So let's go real quick, Marcus, from a brother that just came out to a brother that's going out, and that is Derek Sanderson Jeter, the captain of the New York Yankees, announcing that 2014 will be his last season in the majors. Jeter is 39, and you know, the way the Yankees have been going, the way the whole A-Rod debacle played out, you know, he might be picking the right time to go out.
He is. And, I'm not a Yankee fan, but this made me sad yesterday when this news came out, because I remember when Jeter made his debut, and living in New York for a few years, I've seen my share of Yankee games on TV, and he's just one of those guys that even if you don't like the Yankees, you gotta respect Derek Jeter, because he's just so cool. He's a bit overrated as a shortstop, but we will have that discussion at a later point when Alfred's on. But in terms of just a character guy, he just seems like, you know, such a class act and such a cool guy, and he's led that team to multiple championships. So we had last season with Mariano Rivera stepping down, and now this year Derek Jeter. It's sort of a change in the Bronx in terms of your two staples are now going away, and who's left? A-Rod, the longest tenured New York Yankee left on the roster, Alex Rodriguez, after Jeter steps down.
Yes, he's not the player New York needs, but he's the player New York deserves. Old A-Rod. But talking about Jeter, you know, this is, to me, I think Derek Jeter, who came in 95 and, you know, has kind of been that heart and soul of those Yankees championship teams, he is, in my opinion, like the Cal Ripken of the social media generation, in the sense that he was always the face of the franchise. He was one of the stars of Major League Baseball, stayed with one team his entire career. In some ways, he was underrated, but in a lot of ways, he was also overrated. I think that, you know, I don't view him this way because I'm a little bit, like I said, I was in high school when Jeter came in, so I kind of already had my heroes. But for somebody that's, you know, 30 and under, I could definitely see them thinking, you know, this is one of the greatest players I've ever seen.
Yeah, and he's one of the greatest Yankees we've ever seen, because there's a lot that goes with being a Yankee and being the face of that franchise. And he's, I mean, day in and day out, he's lived up to that standard and he's won them titles. But when you're looking at other shortstops, you can make the argument that he is a little overrated in terms of what his numbers are. But that takes nothing away. He's a .312 lifetime hitter, which is very impressive. He had one season of 100 RBIs, and you know, he's shown some flashes of power, especially in that new ballpark that they have in the Bronx. So it'll be interesting to see where or what the debate is with Jeter in terms of where he ranks as one of the all-time greats at shortstop once he's retired.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm no Yankee fan at all, but you know, even I have to tip my cap to Derek Jeter, you know, again, one of the classiest guys, and especially, you know, in that market, in that fishbowl of New York City, to be that classy and never really have a scandal or anything like that pop off, you know, that shows kind of the character and the consistency of Derek Jeter.
Not only that, one of the biggest pimps out there, and to not knock up a woman, God bless you, Derek Jeter.
Not that we know of.
Hey, there's no proof, man.
Red G's moving silence like the sun.
And he gives out gift bags, too. You heard about that story, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it, man. This guy, no wonder I like this guy.
And it's funny, like, when A-Rod came to the team, it was kind of like, you remember Highlights for Kids, the magazine?
Mm-hmm.
And Highlights for Kids had one section that was always my favorite, when it was about two little boys showing you what to do right and what to do wrong. It was Goofus and Gallant. A-Rod is Goofus, and Derek Jeter was always Gallant. That's the way I look at those guys during their time in New York.
Yeah, I mean, he's done everything the right way, and he even got along with A-Rod, which is a miracle. So, you know, the fact that he was able to handle that whole controversy of another shortstop coming in and, you know, trying to take his spotlight in New York, and he, you know, he did it the right way. He said, hey, I'm here to embrace you, and, you know, you're going to do your thing, I'm going to do my thing, and we're going to, you know, try to win, and they did win a title together, so that says a lot about Jeter, and A-Rod, to be frank.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give A-Rod credit, too, you know, for switching positions. I don't know if a lot of guys with that type of ego, that type of, you know, it could be argued that A-Rod was the better player when he came in.
Oh, he was. Oh, he was,
and
yeah.
For him to, you know, say, okay, I'm going to take third base, and you stay short, that shows some, you know, maturity from A-Rod, and so you got to give him that at least.
Yeah, yeah.
But you mentioned Derek Jeter being a, you know, a solid hitter, but we'll go from the hitter on the diamond to my hitter, Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State. What's going on in college basketball, Marcus? I can't even get the story out. We got fans, players shoving fans, fans spitting on players, fans getting ejected. What the hell is going on in the NCAA?
This is something that's going on in sports, period, you know. And this is one of those stories that I was on the East Coast, so I didn't know about this story until I woke up the next morning and I saw it online, and I was like, oh. And then after seeing the video and hearing about what was allegedly said compared to what Smart is claiming, I don't want to say that I condone what Marcus Smart did, but I understand. I mean, there's a line that shouldn't be crossed, that is often crossed by fans, especially this guy in particular who has had incidents with other players within the conference in the past. And, you know, the heat of the moment when you're down there, when you're, it's a close game, I understand why he did what he did. I'm glad he only got 3 games for what he did. I know there's some people who thought he would never play again for Oklahoma State, which is ridiculous. Let's be real. The guy simply got shoved in the chest. He didn't punch him. He didn't use a fist. He didn't shove his old lady next to him. He just simply shoved him in the chest. And I'm not condoning, I'm not saying that other players should do this to fans when they're in situations like this, but there's also a line that fans are getting way too comfortable with these players, especially these young guys. You know, if you're gonna heckle a professional, that's one thing, but if you're gonna heckle a 19-year-old, and say all these type of reckless things to them, then I can't feel sorry for you if you get hurt as a result.
Yeah, the thing that I think about it, it's two schools of thought for me. For one, if you're a player in at any level, you should not put your hands on the fans. You know, that's just smart. I know fans can be idiots, they can be, you know, boneheads, but you can't put your hands on the fans because you have more to lose than they do. But the other thing is, like you mentioned, Marcus, these are grown men yelling at kids, grown men spitting on kids, grown men throwing insults and using racial slurs, allegedly, at kids. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. I mean, if you want to go to an NBA game and call Chris Bosh a bum or call LeBron James an a-hole, that's fine. They make their money. They know what they're in for. But you're talking about 19-year-old student-athletes, 18-year-old student-athletes, 20-year-old student-athletes. These are kids, man. And for fans to kind of think that they can take that type of leeway with these kids and not be reprimanded, and that's why I was glad the fan got tossed out of the game the other night. You know, you just can't act with this sense of, you know, impunity. Like, oh, I can say whatever I want. I paid my $20. I got my ticket. You know, because at the end of the day, you have to act like an adult, just like the player has to act like he got some common sense as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think this is going to hurt Marcus Smart's NBA draft stock. It shouldn't, but it should be just a red flag and say, hey, you know, this is something they should probably keep an eye on in the future. But it seems like the school has handled it well for the most part after it happened. They waste a little time. They get a suspension. And Travis Ford, his head coach, is, while he's behind him, he understands that he did mess up, and he hopes that he learns from his mistake. And I haven't heard much about what exactly is going to happen with the fan going forward. I mean, this guy is, there's a screen grab of him making a gesture, I want to say it's a couple years ago, to another Oklahoma State player at a game. And this is a guy who travels around to Texas Tech games and just is a super fan. This is what he does. So it's, I'm actually surprised it hasn't happened sooner, because some of the stuff that you hear at college games, especially at the big time college games, is pretty disgusting. And I'm surprised the guy hasn't snapped earlier and done something about it.
Yeah, it's not a good look for either the fan or the athlete in this situation. So, you know, and like you said, I think Marcus Smart's going to be okay. He's a quality player, and, you know, I don't think his draft stock will be affected that much by this incident. But you know what, Marcus? Last week, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the show, we debuted a brand new segment in honor of the Sochi Winter Olympics, and I think it went over pretty well with the listeners out there.
I was very upset.
You didn't like Alfred and my coverage of the Olympics?
You spent all that time in your production for that soundbite and then to not talk about the Winter Olympics, I was kind of hurt.
See, we got a gold medal in trolling.
And I'm not even a Winter Olympic guy besides hockey. But I was just like, oh, Winter Olympics are, and then crickets. And I was like, oh, okay.
Damn it, baby, let's go to Captain EO again. But we are going to talk some Winter Olympics, at least for a little bit this week. So, Reggie, play that theme again, and we're going to talk some Winter Olympics. And since you were so excited about it last week, Brother Marcus, I'll let you go ahead and kick off the conversation.
I am feeling very Olympic today.
Let's get this mother crunk! Yeah! What? Okay!
I love gold!
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Hockey. Screw the rest of the stuff. We're not doing well with anything else.
So this doubles as a Ask a Hockey Negro.
It does. Special edition.
Olympic edition.
Olympic edition. Yeah, hockey got underway this morning, 7:30 Eastern. U.S. won their first match, 7-1 against Slovakia. And it was an impressive showing. They had 6 goals in the second period. And I think, you know, whether this team medals or not, it's going to be a tough run for them based on the competition. But it's going to depend on what Jonathan Twitt does in net as a goalie. He's the Kings goalie, so he's someone I'm familiar with. And he's one of those guys that when he's on, but sometimes he has these mental lapses where he tends to not be on the top of his game, and he tends to, at that point, not be a very efficient goalie. But they do have Ryan Miller on the bench as well, so they do have some options, and I think offensively they can hang with teams. But defensively and at goaltending, they might be a bit of a question mark. But I'm always up for a little USA-Canada in hockey, and hopefully we will get it during the Winter Olympics. If not, well, we get Russia next, I think. Russia is a
Yeah, I mean, Group A. Yeah, Group A with the U.S., Russia, Slovenia, and Slovakia. I mean, it's kind of like you got the two heavyweights and then the two also-rans. And you mentioned USA crushed Slovakia 7-1, but Russia, you know, they put the beat down on Slovenia as well, 5-2. So that sets up this classic rivalry. Even though the Cold War is over, it's going to renew on the ice. And you know, I actually like Olympic hockey. You know, I'm not the biggest NHL fan, but I think the way that the game is played at the Olympics is probably the purest form and the most entertaining to me as a fan.
That's what makes Olympic hockey so great. This is the best. I mean, this is pretty much all-star hockey. And, you know, you don't have the fights that you see in the NHL, which makes for a smoother game, a faster game. And the pacing's a lot better. If you're used to watching the NHL, you should check out Olympic hockey because it's a lot smoother, a lot faster. Usually not as many whistles because these guys are the pros. They're the best of the best, so I would check out USA-Russia, which is on the 15th. It's Saturday morning at 7:30 Eastern. Russia's going to be tough. I think they have the offensive to hang in with them, but it's going to come down to defense goaltending for the U.S., and it'd be great if they won. If they didn't win, I think they can still advance without a win, and if they take care of business in their last game. So it'll be interesting to see how they come out against Russia.
So you said that game Saturday at 7:30?
Yep, it's on the 15th, yeah, Saturday morning.
Okay, so I have a prediction for this game, Marcus.
Okay.
And that prediction is Godfather will be asleep. I don't care how good the game is. I ain't getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning for nothing.
That's why you have DVR. I taped today's game. I woke up at my regular time and watched this morning's hockey.
Unless I'm getting paid, I'm not getting up at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only game I'd probably wake up for to actually watch at 4:30 my time would be if they played Canada or if they made the gold medal game.
Do you think they had a shot?
I think they have an outside shot, yeah. Just based on, I mean, offensively this team is pretty stacked compared to previous Olympic teams. And, yeah, it's all, hockey's all about goaltending. If Jonathan Twitt gets on a roll, they can definitely make it to the gold medal game, which is on February 23rd, which is a big day for wrestling fans because that's also the launch of the network. Oh, no, take that back. It's the 24th. Shit. Day off. That's the last day of the Olympics on Sunday. So that's also Elimination Chamber, not a big day for wrestling fans. So, oh, hey, as for the wrestling Olympics, yeah, don't die on the mountain. That's my only advice.
Yeah, and stay off the bobsled track if you're cleaning, man.
Yeah, and Bob Crosses did better, dude. Your eyes fucked up.
But yeah, like for real, like that would be the worst, man. Like if I'm cleaning the bobsled track and then the bobsled hits me, I'm on it, Sochi. Like for real. Hey, Vladimir, cut me a check. But speaking of cutting checks, we're going to go to the World of Professional Wrestling coming up next in the Ringside Rap. You're listening to the King of Sport. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. If you're probably listening to this on Friday, if you got somebody to love, if not, learning to love yourself is the greatest love of all. R.I.P. Whitney. So we're going to talk about one of the things we love the most, and that is pro wrestling. Coming up next in the Ringside Rap. Stick and stay. More Kings of Sport after the break.
Someone to kiss, someone to miss. When you're away through here, gone each day. To be loved, to be held. Wow, what a feeling.
Era's coming.
From Eli and Peyton to Rondé and Tiki, BJ and Justin, Cal and Billy, and even Brett and Owen, brothers have always made the world of sports and entertainment a little more exciting. We'll enter three new brothers on the scene who are changing the game one show at a time. It's the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com. And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Rap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, the world's most dangerous sports show powered by Place to Be Nation. Go to placetobenation.com where you can find the latest and greatest news and stories in the world of sports, pop culture, pro wrestling, anything you want. If you want it, they got it. Place to Be Nation is your spot for the best in pop culture. And it is now time for the Ringside Rap, our weekly look at the wild and wacky world of professional wrestling. And like we mentioned earlier, Marcus, you know, you and I coming back together this week is one thing, but with the WWE Network launching in less than 2 weeks, we have returns of two other stars from days gone by. And I think it's very interesting the way that they're bringing these cats back and the way they're positioning the network. So let's get into it, man.
All right, this is actually three stars. So the rumor now is that for the day after Elimination Chamber, which is also the launch of the network, will be the return of The Undertaker, which is not a huge surprise. It's when he usually rolls back in. And also the return after, I believe, 8 years of Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart.
Brother.
Back in the company. Oh, boy. This Tuesday and Texas main event. Coming in together all these years later.
I was going to say, what is this, like the 20th anniversary of that match?
Oh, it's 23. It wasn't a 91. It wasn't after Survivor Series.
Yeah, you're right.
91.
You're right.
So it's 23 years ago.
The 23rd anniversary of Tuesday in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But I think it's smart. I think Undertaker will be on the body of the show, as will Jimmy Hart. But Hogan, you know, I think that's a guy that you can save to the end. Maybe come out during the overrun and have Cole or JBL say, you know, if you want to hear the rest of what this legend has to say, get on the network right now.
I believe I called this right after we went to CES. I said this is a possible scenario that they would do. It just made sense to have Hogan come out. And if you're going to do this whole post show, why not have Hogan part of the post show and try to force people to log on to view what he has to say? It just made sense. And I'll be happy to see him back. I don't need to see him wrestle, which he won't be wrestling, which is great. But, you know, it just, between him and Flair, you need guys like that around, I think, just to keep the nostalgia going, especially if the network's going to be based on viewing all these classic matches. I mean, it made sense to have your two biggest stars, or two of your biggest stars in the company, back in the company and back on TV.
I agree with your theory, Marcus, but there's a crazy part of my brain that thinks that you'll have Taker during the show, you'll have Hogan during the second hour, and then at the end, in that overrun, in the third hour, all of a sudden, is that Jimmy Melton of South Hart? Stay tuned if you want to hear what happened with WrestleLicious, baby.
I don't do that.
Everybody wants to hear what happened with WrestleLicious and JB Smooth or JB Rich, whatever the dude's name was on that show, and I think this is the thrust of the network to let us know what happened with that great promotion. I can't even say that with a straight
face. Yeah.
I did like, though, like just on a tangent, talking about WrestleLicious, like the whole conceit of the show was that this cat, JB Rich, won the lottery. And this brother decided to spend all of his millions on a wrestling company run by Jimmy Mouth of the South Hart.
And his name wasn't Nate Milton? That's surprising.
No, it was JB Rich. And he looked like Kevin Hart in the show. Like, it might have been Kevin Hart.
No, Kevin Hart's above that. He's above doing Jimmy Hart movies.
Kevin be hustling. He got three movies coming out this year, so you never know. But getting back to the network, you talk about surprises, you talk about big names coming in to launch this network and get it off the ground. Somebody that is kind of conspicuous by his absence, and he was also backstage at Raw this past week doing some stuff for his podcast, is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Do you think we'll see Stone Cold on TV in the coming weeks and months? And if not, do you think this is kind of a missed opportunity for the WWE to kind of get that gravitas from working with Stone Cold?
No, I mean, I don't expect him, nor do I think he'll fit in. It just seems like, where would he fit in to the whole? I mean, especially with Punk being done, that's always been the rumored pairing between Punk and Austin. So it'd just be, you're asking yourself for more of those CM Punk chants if you put Austin out there and have really nothing for him to do.
I mean, that's true for people like you and me, Marcus, but I think the WWE, as we've seen in the past year or so, they're not booking for us. They're not programming for us. You know, they're programming to a wider audience. They're trying to cast a big net. And who's the biggest fish they have? You know, you could say what you want to say about John Cena or a guy like Daniel Bryan, but for a lot of the mainstream fans that may have even a slight connection to the WWE or to pro wrestling, Stone Cold still holds a lot of weight. And I would think it would be, you know, kind of a missed opportunity if they didn't have this guy at least involved somewhat with the, you know, the pimping of this network.
Well, I mean, when you talk about they're not booking for us, are we talking about the kid fan base? Because a lot of these WWE users, or not users, but a lot of these WWE fans now have probably never seen Austin wrestle. So if you're trying to sell the product to the younger audience, then I don't think Austin's going to make a huge impact. But if you're trying to sell it to the older fans, I mean, we've seen Austin so many times that it's not, you know, it's not like Hogan, where we haven't seen Hogan in 8 years, and I mean, Hogan was the face of the company in the 80s. So it's a little different to bring Hogan back, who hasn't been around, compared to Austin, who's made so many appearances and cameos over the years that I don't think it has the same allure to bring him back to just, you know, cut a promo on someone or stun someone. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he came back, but I don't think it's needed at this point.
Well, I mean, Hogan may not have made a cameo in the WWE, but he made that cameo on Gawker, so, you know. Like, that's the one thing. Like, like Hogan, like you said, Marcus, he's an icon. He's got the name value. He was the star of the 80s for the WWE. But this cat that they're bringing in, Terry Bollea, he's not the same guy in the sense of any news that a non-wrestling fan has heard about this guy in the past 5 or 6 years has been kind of a suspect. Do you still think Hulk Hogan has that kind of lure to get people not only to tune in to Raw, but to throw their money down and check out the network?
He's still Hogan. He was still arguably one of the most popular characters when he was in TNA. Every time he came out, the fans still want to see this guy, whether he's just in the ring cutting scripted promos or unscripted promos that he forgets or whatever he does now currently on the mic. But I think there's still, there'll still be that attention. I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing Hogan's music at, whether it be Mania or the night after at Raw. I still think he can draw that attention. Just put the red and yellow on him, play the music. You don't need Jimmy Hart necessarily with him. He can pimp the Legends House and just bring them out. I still think that people will lose their shit when they see Hogan come back, and hopefully they don't announce it ahead of time. Maybe they should leave that as a surprise as opposed to trying to say, oh, NetSuite. It would just seem out of place if Michael Cole NetSuite said, oh, by the way, Hulk Hogan's back on the following Monday.
Yeah, I think you announce Taker. Yeah. And I think you keep Hogan.
Well, I don't think you announce Taker. I mean,
I don't think you can keep both of those guys a secret because, you know, you know, I think it would be cool for us, but if you're the WWE and you want ratings, I think you've got to announce at least one of those guys.
Well, usually with Taker, they have this whole elaborate build and they haven't done anything with him yet. It would also seem out of place to say, oh, Undertaker's making his return next week. Like, okay. I mean, they've addressed the Shield stuff, but I don't think anyone believes that what the Shield did to him last year has kept him injured for that long. So I don't know how they play both angles in terms of trying to introduce these guys or trying to promote these guys ahead of time.
You know what they should do real quick before we move on to our next topic? You remember when Taker came back, I don't know if it was the last time or the time before, it was the time when he cut his hair, mm-hmm. when he first cut his hair, and they had those vignettes of Taker like in his lair with all this Batman-like computer technology.
Uh-huh.
I think they should go back to that, have him in his lair, have the computer screens going, the monitors going, and then they pan the camera over and Taker's on the couch drinking a beer in like an Al Bundy outfit. He's like, yep, Sting ain't coming back this time. I was waiting for him too. That would be how I book it, but that's why I'm not running a wrestling company. But somebody who may be running a wrestling company pretty soon in the near future, Brother Marcus, is one J-E-R-R-E-T-T Jeff Jarrett. And Double J put a video out this week, and it was very telling, even though he didn't really tell us a lot. Some of the context clues in the video kind of stuck out to me, and I know they did to you as well. But for those that haven't seen the video, kind of let people know what Jeff Jarrett has been up to.
Eating Popeyes and...
Eating Popeyes and hanging with Karen Jarrett. I think that's a good life.
And using shitty cell phones to record videos. This video is a piece of shit. It's like Ring of Honor quality bad. I don't know what he shot it on. But parts of it are fine, but the parts that feature just Jarrett at his house to just, I don't know what happened with the video, but yeah, the video is basically him traveling to Mexico. I guess the reason he's going to Mexico is because he's working a show this weekend. But he's trying to tease it as he's taking all these meetings about his Nets project. And the one part that I raised my eyebrow, where I think he's a little wrong, is that he said wrestling is close to a boom period. I would disagree. I would say it's the opposite. but, you know, he's hinting that he has this major announcement coming soon about a possible promotion or partnership with AAA or whatever he has up with the works. But this Tease has his first interview since he left TNA, and it was okay. I mean, there wasn't much there. But sooner than later, I would like to hear what he's planning on doing, whether he's planning on starting his own federation, which I think would be a mistake, or whether he's trying to partnership with the English product of AAA, which I think would be a better fit for him.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you know, in terms of saying it's going to be a boom period, I agree. I don't think that's going to happen. I do think there will be some increased interest among wrestling fans and former wrestling fans, primarily because of the WWE Network, which he mentioned in the video. I thought it was kind of funny that he did not mention the initials TNA once.
He did, I thought, at the very beginning. I thought he mentioned something about...
He said, this is my first video since leaving TNA?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah, that's the only mention of TNA was, yeah, I left them motherfuckers. But I think that you're onto something in terms of AAA. And I think that Jared and Toby Keith, I think they could start something up from scratch. But why not take an existing company and expand it to a audience that may not be used to it? And I think AAA is a solid product. They've been solid for years. They've got some talent down there. And, you know, I think it's much more bang for Jarrett's buck if he takes the AAA guys and puts the Jeff Jarrett packaging around it. You know, kind of similar to what TNA did in India with Ring of King. And that was, I mean, it didn't last long, but if you go back and look at those shows, I think it was a very simple product, but it was also a very entertaining product. And I think if Jarrett and AAA could kind of find a way to do that same thing, especially in America where there's a large Latino audience, a large Hispanic-speaking audience, I think that, you know, it could have some legs.
It could, but my only thing is you're going to need a Hispanic figurehead to sort of be in that position as well.
You know who's out there?
Conan.
Boom.
Yeah. You're gonna need someone because Toby Keith and Jeff Jarrett is not gonna draw in the it'll draw in the Dringos, but it's not gonna draw in the core audience that you probably need to get AAA.
Conan is a guy who can't work anymore, but he's somebody that I don't think has ever lost the gift of gab, and if you want a figurehead for the company, I think you could do a lot worse for a Hispanic audience than Conan.
You realize Conan's 50 years old?
He is, but, you know, he's...
I'm just damn, we're getting old. Just like...
Yeah. I mean, I guess going to Iran keeps him young.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's a guy that has had movies in Mexico. He's at one time, you know, obviously not now, but at one time, he was kind of this Latino heartthrob down there. So I think... And he has a good relationship with Jared. I think that could be something that could be potentially interesting, and I don't know. I think it would play well on the West Coast, especially in California, but I don't know how that would play nationally. But it would be interesting to see, you know, they're not going to overtake the WWE, but it would be interesting to see how they compare with TNA in its current state.
Yeah, if they get on the right network, even if it's like a Spanish, like a Telemundo, but they broadcast in English, I think, well... I don't think they do English broadcasts in Telemundo. So that'd be tricky. Or Univision.
They'd have to find an American partner. But I think, you know, was the guy that created Survivors involved with the group?
Yeah.
Mark Burnett is involved with the group. And also, you know, if they could get a guy like an AJ Styles, you know, even though he's, you know, what, 35, 36, somewhere around there, he's still got a couple good years left. He could be kind of the initial face of that promotion.
Yeah, well, I just the TV is going to be the tricky one. As you know, we have one company who's already negotiating TV rights now. We have in the WWE, we have another one in TNA who I think it also it's Oh, it expires next year, their deal with Spike. I just don't know what network would be willing to take on more wrestling. So that might be a little tricky outside of maybe the Latino, like the Telemundo, if you mentioned earlier, Univision.
So yeah, I mean, the TV landscape is getting smaller with the Comcast and Time Warner had a deal to go down today or a proposed deal today. So the TV landscape in terms of that venues and the outlets that you could go to, it is getting smaller. But I think that if you have Mark Burnett attached to the project, if you have Jeff Jarrett attached to the project for somebody in the TV world that's kind of a wrestling mark, I think those are two names that could be attractive.
Yeah, it looks like the network that is going to be airing AAA in the States is called El Rey.
Yeah, Robert Rodriguez, I think.
Yeah, it's a one-hour program that would be accompanied by monthly and quarterly specials as well as live pay-per-views. And El Rey is available currently on Comcast, DirecTV, and Time Warner Cable. So this is sort of like the Comcast deal they have with Magic Johnson for what's name that the network
Aspire,
yeah,
a wonderful network.
I haven't seen it.
I love Aspire, Marcus Vandenberg. I would never say a bad word about it.
You must want something from him.
Hey man, why are you trying to cast aspersions on my love for great quality black programming?
Yeah. So this is similar to what they did with Aspire in terms of having a arrangement for minority interests with a Latino backer. So, I mean, that would solve Jarrett's issue. If he's going to do the AAA thing, then he already has a network, and it looks like there's already a date in mind, or at least a time frame in mind for when they're going to launch the show. So, that's half the work right there.
Yeah, and I don't know Robert Rodriguez in terms of his wrestling fandom, but if he is a fan, I could easily see him kind of, you know, even though he's just kind of the figurehead or the money man of this El Rey network, I could see him, if he's a wrestling fan, saying, oh shit, I want to get involved with this. I want to make this a quality product. And if you got a guy with that kind of vision and direction behind it, at least aesthetically, it could be a pretty cool program.
Do we want movie guys in wrestling, though? I don't. This is just.
I don't think you want movie guys booking, but if you're talking about having a different look and having a different aesthetic than the WWE or TNA, I think you could do a lot worse than Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably means Cheech Marin and Antonio Banderas for sure eventually, but I'd be cool with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the one thing I do like to share is that he has a wrestling mind, and I'd rather have someone calling all the shots who has an eye for the business as opposed to someone who might not know the industry coming in and trying to make this turn into a production or just a glorified eye candy. And at the end of the day, there's really nothing behind it. So I don't know. I don't know what his interest is in wrestling, or if he has one, or if he's just the guy in the chat, and if he's actually not even involved in day-to-day programming for this network. So
I would tend to agree, but I'm very interested to see where this goes. Wrestling can always use competition, and I think that if this thing does come to fruition, it'll make TNA and ROH and PWG and maybe even the WWE step their game up, because one thing I know, and I'm not trying to be racist here, people, but Hispanics love some wrestling. And if you can give them Latino heroes and Latino villains and a guy like Jeff Jarrett with a strong wrestling mind and celebrities like Toby Keith or Robert Rodriguez putting some money down, this thing could actually have some legs. And I'm actually more, even though this thing is not even on step one, I actually have more faith in Jarrett and AAA if this does come to pass than TNA at this point.
Yeah, I mean, TNA's headed in the wrong direction, and with every aspiring contract that comes up, it seems like they're losing guys right and left. And I guess the Nets' big one is Kurt Angle in the summer, and he's already flirting with WWE.
Well, you know who is good friends with Kurt Angle, and he's such good friends that he married his wife.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Stranger things have happened, brother.
No, come on. Why would you want a partnership with the guy who took your wife?
Because I don't think Kurt will get a call up from the WWE.
He'll get a chat from them.
I think that they would like to have him as a Legends deal, but I don't think they want him in the ring.
Well, if he's smart, he'll take the bigger check from WWE for not wrestling as opposed to taking a smaller check.
Key word, if Kurt Angle is smart.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to leave it at that. So next up, Tijuana. It's true. It's damn true. I don't think we can go any further with this, Marcus.
No.
See, you completely backed out of that. You left me hanging on the limb right there. I feel like the New Orleans Pelicans mascot.
You got a makeover.
Yeah, which we're going to talk about coming up in segment 4. So don't touch that dial, don't touch that laptop, don't touch that iPod. Because we got more Kings of Sport coming up next.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show. I break down matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad Show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another week. Godfather Nate Milton alongside Marcus Neverland Vanderberg. That's why you got to listen to the A-Block, folks. If you skipped ahead to segment four, go back and listen to the top segment. But yeah, we're going to close up things here with segment four like we do each and every week. But before we do that, want to send a shout out to our brand new sponsor, our partner in crime, if you will, the good people at Amazon.com. I know, folks, you buy things all the time, and you know, Amazon is the leading distributor, you know, leading retailer online, and you know, maybe you want to buy some Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl merchandise. Maybe you want to, you know, Hulk Hogan's coming back for the WWE Network, and you want to buy some great Hulk Hogan DVDs of the past. Maybe it's Valentine's Day and you screwed up, and instead of buying your wife or girlfriend flowers, you bought a 2-for-1 coupon for the Sizzler. And you need to make things up. Well, the way you can do that is go to Amazon.com and buy something special. And don't just go to Amazon.com. Go to us. Go through us. Help us help you. Go to the Kings of Sport. Check us out on Twitter. And also on Facebook, facebook.com/kingsofsport. And go to our new link, which leads to our Amazon store. And you can buy anything you want via that website. And not only will you be doing a good thing for yourself, but a portion of that will go to your friends at the Kings of Sport podcast. And, you know, help us keep the lights on here and help us do bigger and better things in 2014 and beyond. So, again, go to our Facebook page as well as our Twitter feed, and you can check out our Amazon site. And, again, shout out to the people at Amazon.com. But, Marcus, I want to talk about something right now that had me completely scratching my head when we talked about it before the show. And it still doesn't make any sense now. New Orleans is a hot spot, even if they have been besieged by winter weather. Not only are they hosting the NBA All-Star Game, but they're hosting WrestleMania. And a lot of changes going down in the arena and the inhabitants of that arena. So let the people know if they haven't heard. What's going on in New Orleans, man?
So when you're watching your All-Star coverage this weekend and, you know, the TNT broadcast says live from the Smoothie King Center, don't adjust your dial. That is actually the new name of the New Orleans Arena. Formerly the New Orleans Arena is now called the Smoothie King Center after the Pelicans signed a new naming rights deal with good old Smoothie King. I've never had Smoothie King. It's always... I always see it at random train stations and airports, usually back east, and I'll stick to Jamba Juice. I'm good. So, I'm sure, have you had Smoothie King before?
I've never heard of Smoothie King.
Really?
Like you talk about Jamba Juice, we have Tropical Smoothie Cafe here in Virginia, but I've never heard of Smoothie King.
Yeah, don't see it out west, but I've seen it in New York for sure. And it says of the 30 NBA cities, 21 currently have Smoothie King franchises. So maybe you're one of those nine in the South.
Apparently there is. I'm looking them up right now. There is one listing for a Smoothie King in the Hampton Roads area. So I may have to
take a
search
trip. You should report back on the Smoothie King experience.
I didn't know. I'm just looking them up on Wikipedia now. I did not know they were located. The headquarters is in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So I guess it makes sense from that perspective, but it also makes sense from another perspective. I don't know if you're a fan of Workaholics, Marcus.
I'm not, no.
Well, Workaholics, it's hit and miss with me. Sometimes I think they're hilarious. Other times I think they're ridiculously stupid. But there's a character on Workaholics named Montez. And Montez has a famous quote, at least it's garnered some memes on the internet. And he says, I guess they're at a party, and one of the guys is like, what can we do to get this party really going? And Montez says, I know what we could do. We need some smoothies. And they're like, smoothies? And he's like, yes, because white folks love smoothies. With a V. So I guess if white folks love smoothies, then the Smoothie King, I guess, is a good fit for this arena. But, yeah, I didn't know they were that big time. Like I said, I hadn't heard of the brand before we talked tonight, but I guess this is a big deal.
Yeah, and it's already happened in terms of the change of the name. And the only reason I found it is I was on the WWE website looking at the tickets, and I looked under the night after Mania, and I was like, what the hell is the Smoothie King Center? That's not the New Orleans Arena. And I Googled it, and I was like, oh, okay. So we had the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on WrestleMania night, and then the next night, the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah, and I guess this deal just took place on the 5th, like you mentioned, and it's crazy. Like, it's I guess the arena was one of the few NBA arenas without a naming rights deal in place, and Smoothie King and their owner, Juan Kim, put his name on a dotted line, and yeah, I guess I'm looking right now, their revenue is $160 million worldwide.
That's a lot of smoothies.
Yeah, that's a lot of smoothies, because white folks love smoothies. But yeah, I think that's crazy. Like, it is, I don't know, like, it's not a tough name, it's not a strong name, but I guess if it makes dollars, it makes sense.
Well, it's better than the Sleep Train Arena in Sacramento.
The Sleep Train Arena.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a mattress store. And they have the naming rights to the Arco Arena, or formerly the Arco Arena.
To be fair, that is fitting for the way the Kings have been playing lately.
Yeah.
I got to see the Kings on a Sunday night up in D.C. Took a trip up there to see the Kings and the Wizards. And I was in a suite provided by a radio station up there. And let's just say, the most intriguing part of the night was the free beer and the free chips.
No free food?
Nah, it was. I don't want to speak ill of them, because I definitely want to be invited back. But let's just say I filled up on the dollar menu at Mickey D's beforehand, because I knew that the accoutrements, the appetizers, if you will, were going to be limited in the suite.
Oh, okay. Well,
the beer was free though. So
there
you
go.
I definitely partook of that. But we mentioned one of the inhabitants of the arena, and you talked about makeovers earlier, Brother Marcus. The Pelican has gone under the knife, and apparently it's a softer, gentler New Orleans Pelican that we're going to be seeing from here on out.
Yeah, Pierre, the Pelican, got a makeover. He was easily the most scariest mascot in all of sports when he made his debut early this season. But thanks to this whole elaborate, I guess he was attacked. That's what they're, I think they,
it was a work. It was a work.
It was a total work. Everything's a work. He was, went under some plastic surgery, and he made his re-debut last night in New Orleans, and looking much better, looking like an actual Pelican as opposed to, oof. It was pretty rough. I mean, if you haven't seen it, he looked like a Chuck E. Cheese character drawn bad.
Yeah,
animatronics.
Yeah, he looked like he had a... If you look at the Pelican mascot now compared to how he was before, it's like going from current-day Bruce Jenner to Olympic Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Because the Pelican mascot before, it looked like he had a lot of work done, very plastic, very unappealing. And the current mascot is kinder and gentler and more friendly. And it's crazy. Like, I'm still, getting used to that name. Like, the name is still odd to say, but I think the mascot change is actually a step in the right direction.
He had some Sambo traits, too, about him. Some characteristics around the mouth area that were kind of disturbing.
Yeah, he you could tell he loved that chicken from Popeyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I want to say, like, mascots in general are iffy. I think there should only be, like, two or three mascots allowed to you know, still exist, and the San Diego Chicken being first and foremost among them. But if you're going to do a mascot now, first of all, don't make him frightening to children. And second of all, you know, you might want to run it by some people other than the people in the boardroom, because they may say, yeah, he's giving off kind of a coon vibe here. You might not want to go that way.
Yeah, especially not in New Orleans.
No. As was it, Mayor Nagin informed us it was a chocolate city?
Well, he'll soon be going to jail to see some chocolate asses, because
boom.
he got convicted this week.
You're saying Mayor Nagin is going to Neverland Ranch?
Yeah, never pound me in the ass, Ranch. He got convicted of.
I guarantee it won't be no candy shop there.
No.
None that you want to.
No,
eat
No, nothing you want to eat, suck. No.
Lick none of that. No. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Taking bribes. Don't take bribes, people.
Yeah. Not a good look for the mayor.
Faces more than 20 years in prison.
I think that he might have earned a spot on the disgraced mayor Mount Rushmore with Marion Barry and Rob Ford.
No, Marion's not on that list because he got reelected after all that. Disgraced, he was beloved.
He was beloved and disgraced.
He's still in office. He's still in I think city council now. I mean,
but you can't tell one story about Marion Barry without bringing up. Yeah, he got busted with crack.
He got busted with crack, but. And he got his job back.
Had the greatest quote ever when he was confronted. Bitch, set me up.
And he did set up, but come on, this dude is 77. He's still.
And looks relatively good for a former crack smoker.
Yeah. There's no second chance for Rain Aiden. Rain Aiden's not getting another job in the state of Louisiana. Marion Barry.
At least not in the public sector. He may get a job in jail.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. Let's move away from this topic, Marcus. Let's go to something much more family friendly and much more positive, and that is the world of MMA and the UFC in particular. A lot of shakeups going on lately.
A lot of shakeups, a lot of injuries. UFC 170 is next Saturday, and Rashad Evans injured his knee, had to pull out of his fight with Daniel Cormier. And Cormier, who was moving down a light heavyweight, took to Twitter, and he was very upset. He wanted to fight. He's been trying to cut all this weight. He looks good. He's in great shape, and he really wanted to fight. And Dana White found him an opponent, someone that Daniel is familiar with, actually. His name is Patrick Cummings. He is a Penn State graduate, and two-time All-American, and he actually used to train with Daniel Cormier. This dude, literally, he's one of the top prospects, but he was literally, you know, hand-picked off the, off the street, pretty much. And I know Chael Sonnen had put a plea out there to take the fight, because that's what Chael Sonnen does, is take fights in last moments and get beat. So, luckily, Dana White decided better not to make the call for Chael. Let me see if I can find this quote.
Yeah, this definitely seems like a kind of a cupcake guy, a tomato can guy. But then again, you never know. I mean, stranger things have happened, especially in the world of MMA, where one punch can decide a fight. Overall, though, I got to say, Marcus, as you look up that information, I'm not really pumped for this card.
Oh, I'm not either.
And that's, I'm a huge Ronda Rousey fan, and I'm not excited for this card at all.
Well, I mean, there's not much to this card. This is the second card this month. This is sort of like what happens with wrestling when they try to do two pay-per-views in a month. the second one usually is lacks the star power and allure. And even with the Rousey headlining in the show of Sarah McMahon, it's missing something. And I think there's too many shows. I mean, between pay-per-view and Fox Sports 1, there's just too much going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of the cards, the fight nights and things of that nature. It just seems oversaturated right now. And again, you know, I'm sure McMahon is a credible fighter, but like I said, it's not a fight that is intrinsically attractive. It's not a fight that I look forward to. It almost seems like, you know, using that WWE analogy, it's almost like, you know, you got Brock Lesnar for a certain number of dates, and instead of saving him for the big shows, you run him out at Payback. And that's what it seems like. You know, Ronda Rousey, arguably one of the UFC's most marketable fighters, most popular fighters, and it seems like she's on this B show.
Well, no, but they had to put her on the show because if she wasn't on the show, then no one would really care. I mean, she is here to save the show. The problem is she actually respects Sarah McMahon, so you're not getting the same kind of trash talking you were at 168 with Misha Tate. So that's the big difference, is there's no back and forth between the two ladies. It's sort of a mutual respect. They're both Olympians, and, you know, it's just business as usual for both camps.
Now, you know, if she wanted to fight an Olympian, you know what would be a really attractive fight, not in the cage, but from a PR standpoint?
Who?
Rowdy Ronda Rousey versus Lolo Jones. Lethal Lolo, let's book it.
It wouldn't be much of a fight.
Next year at the Smoothie King Center.
I would give it 30 seconds at the most.
Hey, that would, I mean, it would be a terrible fight, but at least there would be some buzz around it, which there is little to none around this particular card.
Yeah, and I don't expect there to be any buzz in that tweet when everyone gets to Vegas. It's one of those cards that if you have the money to spend to buy it, great. If you don't, then you're probably not missing much.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm going to spend money on a UFC show, I'm more apt to just save my money for next month and buy UFC 171, you know, because at least then, you know, we're getting, what, Hendricks and Lawler and Condit and Woodley.
Yeah, Diego Sanchez is fighting again.
Yeah, so there's
Jake Shields.
Yep, Shields and Lombard. So there's quality fights there, at least quality fighters that I'm interested in. Why not just save my money for that show?
Yeah, and I mean, this is the problem of running so many pay-per-views, is you're stretching yourself thin in terms of the fact that Ronda's fighting in less than 2 months is an issue, and there's just too many cards, too many shows, and you don't have enough star power currently.
And 171 money could have been like, As good as I think it is on paper, like Alfred and I talked about it last week. If Silva was on the show, that's another added bonus. Like this would have been a super stacked show.
Anderson Silva,
Thiago Silva.
Oh yeah,
cracky tails.
Yeah,
allegedly
there was no crack in that story, was there?
There was. I mean, his ex wife alleged drug use. Oh. So Alfred and I worked it in. You know, we had to work it into the construct of Cracky Tales.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
It is a stretch, but, you know, we played Plastic Man Stacey Augman and stretched for that one because we had to fit it in to the narrative of what we were trying to do last week. That's what happens when you let the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah.
When you let the convicts run the prison, as Ray Nagin will soon find out.
Oh, but back to Patrick Cummins. So Dana White said, I heard about this kid, Patrick Cummins, before. The thing that's interesting about this kid is that he was the training partner of Daniel Cormier and claims that he made Cormier cry when they would train together. Not only did he say that, he said he broke him every time, and he said he would break him again on Saturday. Cormier responded by saying, there's a lot of pressure that comes from trying to win a gold medal, something that Pat wouldn't understand since he was only a training partner to me and Kerry McCoy. he wasn't the guy. I appreciate him stepping up and taking the fight, but we're going to see who's going to be crying after we fight next Saturday night. So.
This reminds me of The Great White Hype. I know we talked about this movie before, but I don't know if you ever saw it.
No.
Well, the whole premise was that Damon Wayans' character was the heavyweight champ, and to gin up interest, Jeff Goldblum's character found this white fighter that beat Damon Wayans' character when they were amateurs. Mm-hmm. And so he kept building up this thing as, you know, this guy beat James the Grim Reaper Roper when they were amateurs, and he's got an unbeatable left hook. And the movie builds up to the climax, spoiler alert, where the character that Jeff Goldblum finds hits James Grim Reaper Roper with the left hook, and Damon Wayans' character just kind of looks at him and laughs and knocks Jeff Goldblum's guy out. And that's kind of the sense I got when I saw that quote from Dana White. It's kind of like, we all know Dana White is a master of shilling, a master of promotion, the P.T. Barnum of this era. And I think he's doing his best, but to say this guy was his training partner, and I'm sure he's got experience with Cormier, and if anybody can figure him out, it's this guy. You know, I'm not buying it.
Well, I mean, that was Dana repeating what Patrick told him. That's not Dana's opinion. That's just what he's just relaying what Patrick told him. So I that's not really on Dana. He's just relaying information, and yeah, of course, this is his job, is to sell the fight. This is the co-main event. So yeah, I mean, whatever he says, you sort of have to take it with a grain of salt. But I mean, if this is what Patrick's saying, then, you know, that's coming from him, and that has more weight than, you know, if it was just Dana making it up.
I got to give credit, though. Patrick Cummins, whose nickname is Duncan. Patrick Duncan Cummins. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Patrick Duncan Cummins just kind of literally came off the street and found his way to co-headline a UFC pay-per-view. Win, lose, or draw, he's going to have a hell of a month.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting a payday. He's gone from working at a coffee shop to now becoming on the national stage, the pay-per-view stage, and he's had a chance to, you know, if he beats Daniel Cormier, that's going to secure him. He'll be around in the UFC longer than one fight if he beats Cormier. Even if he loses but looks impressive, I think he'll stick around in the sport, in the company. And I mean, that's a lot for a guy who just has four professional fights under his belt, that for him to make this leap. It'll be interesting to watch how it plays out.
Yeah, I think if anything, if I were him, I would just completely play this up and show up handing out donuts to the fans and have a catchphrase, it's time to make the donuts. That's just me. I would totally take advantage of, you know, this guy's 15 minutes of fame, because I think Cormier should make quick work of this dude. You know, I think Patrick Cummins will probably be back behind the counter selling lattes sooner rather than later.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he's no slouch. I mean, he did, for anyone to go undefeated at Penn State as a wrestler, that says a lot. Regardless if he is still new to the sport, he still has a strong wrestling background, and I think he can use that to keep going in the sport. So I think it just depends on how intimidated he'll be in the octagon. I think it's going to help that he has a relationship with Cormier in terms of training. So he knows what he's working with in terms of his in-ring style. And this is Cormier's, I mean, Cormier is cutting weight to fight at this weight class. So he's also, this is new territory for Cormier as well.
One last question in terms of Cummins' future. Do you think he gains more by, you mentioned his wrestling background, do you think he gains more by losing, going to the cards in a boring fight, or losing in a short but exciting fight where he gets knocked out?
A boring fight that he can show off what he can do in the octagon. If he can, you know, land some takedowns and show off the wrestling skills, then, you know, yeah, he might have lost. It might not be exciting, but, you know, I think he can make a better case to sell himself to have another fight, as opposed to having, you know, getting one or two shots and then just getting knocked the fuck out. So
that is true. That is true. So if you're ordering UFC 170, enjoy. I won't. I don't even think I'm going to order it on nefarious means. Like, that's my interest level for this card. And like I said, I'm a big Ronda Rousey fan, but even that is not enough of a draw, you know, to get me to tune in.
I will be watching because I got the hookup. So,
oh, that's going to do it for this week. Again, it's been a fun week. Shout out to Big Nasty, wherever you are. I'm not going to make any allegations, Marcus, but I'm sure he's having fun wherever he's at right now.
He's probably asleep.
Yeah. I think that's a good bet. So hopefully he'll get out of bed before her husband comes home. Oh. Bam. Just throwing shade. That's what we do. That's what we do when you don't show up. So, oh, much love to Big Nasty. But Brother Marcus, where can people find you, follow your work, and ask questions about Neverland Ranch if they have some?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
You can follow the aforementioned Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham at This Is Nasty on Twitter. Check him out on Bleacher Report, read the articles, and check out his videos. Leave him some feedback. You can follow me on Twitter at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the three of us on Twitter at Cospod, KOS_POD. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Stitcher, iTunes. Rate, review, like, share the show. Check us out at placetobenation.com. Vote for us for Podcast of the Month at podcastland.com. Again, you know, there's a lot of great podcasts on that site, but very few of them are owned and operated by African Americans, and this is Black History Month, so throw us a bone. Vote for us at podcastland.com. Check us out at Amazon. Remember Amazon. Go to our Facebook page and follow the link and do your shopping there. And I think that's it for all the shilling this week, Marcus.
Real quick, All-Star Game predictions for 3-point and slam dunk contest.
I think slam dunk, I'm going to go with Who are you going with?
Slam dunk, Paul George. 3-point contest. Bradley Beal.
Oh, good call. I was actually, Beal was on my short list for the 3-point. Haven't seen him in DC on Sunday, and I think he was like 4-for-6 from 3-point range against the Kings. So I'll echo that sentiment with Bradley Beal. And as for the slam dunk contest, George is a good call. But you know what? I'm going to go with Damian Lillard. I'm going to go with Damian Lillard. He's in all 5 events over the weekend. So, but I think he's going to bring out something special for the dunk contest. So my picks are Lillard and Beal, and you're going with George and Beal. Yeah, that's – oh, who do you think is going to win the MVP at the All-Star game?
I'm going to go with the hometown boy, Anthony Davis.
That's an interesting pick. The theme of the past month or so in the NBA has been LeBron and KD. I think that battle continues. I think this is the start of a nice little rivalry that we'll see for at least the next 4 or 5 years. And I think LeBron is going to come out with a point to prove. I'm not going to say he's going to get a triple-double, but I think he's going to be pretty close. And I'll say LeBron James is the MVP in the Smoothie King Center.
Okay.
So, yeah, everybody enjoy the All-Star game and enjoy it with a smoothie or smoothie, depending on your pronunciation. But, yeah, that's going to do it. Again, shout out to Big Nasty. We'll see you back here next week, brother. And happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Again, enjoy the day. And if you are a greeting card person or if you have stock in Hallmark, congratulations. Mazel tov. Because you're making a killing off of these people. I mean, I don't want to sound cynical, but I mean, there is one winner each and every year on Valentine's Day.
Who's that?
And that's the people at Hallmark. The people at Hallmark, the people at Russell Stover, the people at Jared. Every kiss begins with K. They all make a cake off of Valentine's Day.
Don't forget the flower companies, too.
Yes, yes. Pro Flowers, all of them. So, yeah, enjoy your Valentine's Day. And if you're by yourself, thanks for listening. We appreciate you, lonely man, lonely woman. So that's going to do it for this week. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode and more stuff to talk about. So for Marcus Van, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, I am the Godfather named Milton. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.